Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. My favorite hour each week. Good morning. I have a wonderful show. You got to put on your thinking caps for this one, but it's so essential that I get you this information. So let me give you the title, and then we'll take it from there. Today's title, Why You Are Not a Slave to Your Genetics. Why You Are Not a Slave to Your Genetics, and How Radical Healing Will Protect You. Now, why do I do this show, which many of you know I've covered in different ways before, but why do we have to cover this? Because each and every one of us will know that day someday. Well, maybe not every one of us, but many of us have known that day where you're given a diagnosis by a medical doctor in a hospital because you've got problems and you're scared. And when you summon up the strength to ask the doctor, what can I do about this outside of drugs and surgery? The doctor will almost always tell you, look, this is genetic, it's in your heritage, and you're just at that point where your genes expressed, and, well, other than drugs and surgery, there's not a lot you can do. Now, we've all been trained since childhood with this fatalistic notion that once something gets tagged to, oh, my father had it, or my mother had it, our family gets it, I got it, it's in the genes, it's fatalistic. And this is what the science, the hard science today, is turning upside down. But you see, the gap time between the hard science turning it upside down and when you hear it from doctors in the hospital on that bleak and dreary day, that gap time can be many, many, many years, or even never. Now, even Google, the owners of Google, are investing money, have invested billions in these DNA profiling kits. So genetics is here. You're not getting it. You're not being bombarded with it yet. But over 10 to 20 years, everything we're learning about the human genome, about the influence and sequences of genes and disease and so on and so forth, and all this great stuff, is going to translate into two sides of the coin. And one side's going to be where it's used against you, to produce an even more fatalistic notion of what you can do. Example, you'll be genetically tested in your youth for which diseases you're more likely to get. And since the notions may be fatalistic behind it, meaning these are the five diseases that you're highly likely to get, and just keep an eye out, but you're going to get them. And that's one way this can work. And it will work this way. The other way is going to be as we uncover, enhance, make more precise our understanding of genetics, the more we're going to see the light on the other side of the tunnel. Now, there's a biologist, molecular biologist, Nessa Carey. There's a whole bunch of them that are doing this now, meaning they're showing you the light on the other side of the tunnel. They're showing you that the word DNA, genetics, oh, it's all in your genes, oh, there's nothing you can do about it, is really a misnomer. But you're not going to hear about that in the hospitals. John Q. Public may never find this out. Worse yet, what the holistic community does, the holistic doctors of sorts do, is take certain terminologies like epigenetics and they twist the meaning of the word into non-scientific interpretations. And then that fuels the fire from the other side. And as always, the truth is down the middle. What genetics means is, yes, you are definitely more likely to get it. I'm going to interpret it in a very practical way. I hope typically practical way I'm going to interpret it for you, that when they say it's in your genes, it means after 60, work really hard not to have those genes express. And I'll get to that later. But you got to come to terms with this. You got to embrace it. You got to love it. It's exciting, just like computers. You know, it still cracks me up how many people that listen to this show don't get on the computer the way I always suggest to look at the pictures. Understandable if you're driving. But how many people have embraced computers, and how many people are still at that point where they're just learning to work the keyboard? And this is the thing. Insights occur that change the world. Computers was one. This thing with genetics is another. You want to get a grip on this because it's going to come into the vernacular of us all in terms of health very soon. And you want to have knowledge so you can protect yourself, better yet, so that you can use it to your advantage, just like you would use a computer to your advantage today. All right, so I want to do just a brief summary. And again, if you're new to the show, get on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com, straighttalk2t's.cc. That's one word, lowercase. If you can't look at the show today, the pictures, which make this so much easier, do it when you get home, do it later on this week, but please get on the website. Those of you driving, those of you just listening on radio, as always, I'll describe as best I can. We're going to talk about genes. We're going to talk about DNA. We're going to talk about chromosomes, because they're all part of the same family, so to speak. And the big to-do about DNA is that the DNA molecule exists as a bunch of what we call nucleotides, a word some of you are familiar with. And in the human sequencing, there are four nucleotides: adenine, thymine, guanine, and cytosine. So DNA is comprised of four compounds called nucleotides, and the sequence of those nucleotides. If you take those four units, again, this is on the website. If you take those four units, those four nucleotides, adenine, cytosine, guanine, thymine. If you take those four nucleotides and you combine them in specific arrangements or different arrangements, you ultimately get different commands from the inside of the cell for whatever the cell is supposed to do, whatever it's supposed to make. As you know, the DNA is the central computer box of the cell, and the cell is giving out thousands and thousands of commands each day. Now, those nucleotides are in a spatial orientation. So the sequence is one specific characteristic, and then they're in a spatial orientation that creates what we call a helix, like a spiral staircase, which is co-merged with another helix. So we say the DNA double helix is a string of nucleotides. And that string of nucleotides, that double helical string, and again, I have pictures of this on the website, that double helical string goes on for a long, 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 long sequence. And along those sequences are specific areas, and those are called the genes. So nucleotides become a double helical structure that has great length to it, and along those lengths are sections called genes. And those genes are all along a chromosome. And we have 23 chromosomes. So you just go from nucleotides to genes to chromosomes. And that's it in a nutshell. what's relevant to you is that sequence of nucleotides. It can do many things. It can change as it does. There are invariable sequences. And the infinite number of sequences codes for an infinite number of things that each cell does, specific to the cell, specific to the human cell, specific to any other type of cell, and all the different types of things that those cells do. So years ago, we didn't know cells exist, and then we discovered cells. Once we discovered cells, we discovered cell function. And as we kept chipping away over the centuries, ultimately, we figured out there was something called DNA. And then in 1952, Watson and Crick figured out the molecular structure of DNA. And then in 2002, our human DNA was coded by a guy named Craig Venter and another scientist. Now, the last 15 years of DNA research have given us vast insight, all the way to the point where over the next 10 to 20 years, you'll be profiled to determine what the three or four diseases you're coded to get, you might actually get. Okay, now that's the history behind it. And again, what's relevant? What's relevant is since we've discovered DNA, since we felt we had a greater command over genetics, more and more and more, you will hear in the doctor's office, in the hospitals, when you look up and you say, why am I getting this? What happened? How do we explain this? You'll be told bleakly that this is simply a matter of genetics. And that's a very fatalistic approach. All right, now we're going to challenge that. We're going to challenge that because that, in fact, is not really the truth. It's a dimension of the truth, but it by no means encapsulates the truth of the matter. And again, the whole field of epigenetics challenges this. But I want to get more specific, and as I do, you're going to get more comfortable with the notion. Keeping in mind, there are many, many scientists that stand next to me that are writing books, articles, and so on and so forth. And that's the upside of this, and that's what you want to take away from this show today. The upside of the fact. This is a show of hope for you, but as always, you've got to get the education. Now, give me 2 seconds. I just have to make an adjustment. Okay, thank you. Just a little change in the technology. All right, then. First thing we're going to discuss is what we call a primary sequence as opposed to a secondary sequence, as opposed to a tertiary and then quaternary sequence in the DNA molecule. Now, the reason I'm going to do this is because it's not just the sequence of nucleotides that dictates whether or not the gene expresses. So now I just said another mouthful. So if you have a genetic tendency for a disease, before you get that disease, that gene has to express. It has to start talking. It's got to get listened to. What it codes for, what the gene codes for, has to be responded to by the body. And just because you may have a tendency by virtue of your nucleotide sequence, just because you may have a tendency to express, a greater tendency to get cancer, you've got the BRAC25 gene, and that means you're more likely to get breast cancer. Somebody else doesn't have it, so they're not going to get it. That means you have a sequence of nucleotides along your chromosome that makes you more likely to get breast cancer. All that Angelina Jolie stuff, where her mom got cancer and she was coded for it. And so she went out and got the double mastectomy, and she's on the cover of Time Magazine, Woman of the Year, so on and so forth. Remember that. I did a show on that. Because what they found, that she had a specific sequence of nucleotides. This is very real stuff. Yes, yes, some of you are going, how am I going to understand this? Well, that's why I put it on the website. You can listen to the show again and again. But you got to put in just enough basic stuff so you follow. Because it's real. They told Angelina Jolie, like your mom, you test positive for this certain gene, the BRAC25 gene. And that means you're more likely to get breast cancer. And on that basis, she opted for the full mastectomy. So this stuff is very real. Here's the point. That statement means that there's a sequence of nucleotides that are different than somebody else's sequence and make it more likely, potentially, for that woman to get breast cancer, that individual to succumb to the disease. Here's the point. It's not just the sequence of the nucleotides. It's the sequence of the nucleotides which form a chain. And then it's how that chain folds, and how that chain folds, and how that chain folds. Now, again, I put this on the website so the pictures make this easier to understand, but I'm going to give you an analogy that I think will work. If you're making a necklace and it's a bunch of pearls and you got to string those pearls together and each pearl has a different color, let's say it goes red, black, green, blue, and then it goes the reverse of that, and that's what you call the sequence that your company puts out. Let's say somebody else puts in a different sequence of pearls along the string. That gets flagged during genetic testing, and it may mean a much higher likelihood to have a disease. Now, that's where you start when you find out off the genetic panel that you're genetically predisposed to the following diseases. Now, let's say you make that string of pearls, and then you tie the pearls together. Every six or seven pearls, you tie the necklace into a knot. So it doesn't just look like a necklace with a bead of pearls, but every so many pearls, like every six pearls, there's a big knot that you tied into it. So now you've got a circular array of pearls, like a necklace, only this necklace, every six or so pearls, it's got a big knot. The knots comprise the secondary structure of the pearls. The sequence of the pearls and the colors are the primary structure. The knots comprise the secondary structure. Now, suppose you take that knotted circular array of pearls, and then you tie it like you're tying a shoelace. You just gave it a third dimension. That's called the tertiary structure. And if you fold it again, now it's got a quaternary structure. So looking at the sequence of pearls, color, one color to the next, but then looking at the big knobs, and then looking at it cross-tied, and then looking at it folded over again, gives it different levels of quality. Meaning you can't just understand that necklace as a sequence of pearls anymore. So I want you to compare both those necklaces. The way I initially described it, you just strung together a bunch of different colored pearls as a necklace, and then just picture that in your mind and compare it to tying it and folding it and knotting it, and compare those two structures. Here's the reality about getting a disease. The reality about getting a disease is that once you have that knotted up, folded over structure, that necklace I described, before the deleterious gene expresses, before that DNA sequence that causes you disease expresses, that necklace that you knotted up into that bizarre configuration has to unfold, unwind, and reduce itself to its original state. I want you to get that now. So I know there's a lot of science in this show today, more technical, but if you can get this, you're really going to see why you're being ripped off when doctors tell you it's genetic. You really got to understand this, or you're going to more and more hear this prison sentence. Oh, well, testing shows it's in your genes. That's why you've got your Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Hey, doctor, why did I get it but not my brother? When my brother and I, well, we did the same thing. We lived in the same place. We had the same job. We were so similar, but we got completely different diseases. The doctor will look at you and say, based upon your profiling, your genetic coding, you were predisposed because of your genetics. That is not holding water. And you've got to get this point to understand why. So let's, I'm going to repeat this, okay? You're making a necklace, and it's a string of pearls, and each pearl has a different color. Except that one string of pearls has an aberrant color, a sequence of colors that's not normal. Where there's supposed to be a green, there's a blue. And with this blue necklace with this blue pearl that supposedly gives you a higher risk for a disease, we make a necklace, and then what we do is we make these knots in the necklace every 6 or 7 pearls. And then after we do that, like a shoelace, like when you're tying a bow, we take this necklace with these big knots along the way and we cross it over again. And then we do it a second time. And we compare this original regular necklace with that blue pearl, though it's not supposed to be there, to this thing I just described that got folded over so many times. And you got to hold those two in your mind. Because it's not until that knotted up, folded over structure unwinds itself and just allows that blue necklace, that blue pearl, its space, its spatial orientation. It's not until that happens that that deleterious gene will express. Now you got to sit on this statement. You got to get to the website because there's technical terms. One of the processes through which the dangerous gene evolves along the way over the decades, that knotted up sequence unwinds to evolve, is a matter of methylation or demethylation. It's a matter of acetylation or deacetylation. There are chemical processes that we have defined that will determine whether or not big genetic globs unfold or refold. Histones, acetylation, deacetylation. So I'm not going to get into that science. Methylation, demethylation. There's a lot of stages that are involved in determining whether the quaternary structure reduces to the tertiary structure, reduces to the secondary structure, reduces to the primary structure. You just can't say you've got this gene and it expressed. You have to say based on what environmental conditions. So now I'm bringing in another word, environmental. What changes in the terrain occurred to create a deacetylation or to create a methylation or a demethylation or whatever regulates genetic expression specific to this gene. If you leave out those conditions, or what we're starting to call the epigenetics, if you leave out the epigenetic considerations, you're basically leaving out most of how and why things go the way they go. You're leaving out a massive part of the science. Now, you're not even hearing this in doctor's offices. You're not even hearing this in the hospitals. And I promise you that long before you hear any of this, and you may never hear any of this, but long before this gets big, genetic profiling is going to get big. And it's going to work more along the lines of, we know you're going to get ovarian cancer, so why don't you cut your ovaries out early? If I'm wrong, how do you explain Angelina Jolie? Who then we give Woman of the Year? Who then gets the cover of Time magazine? I mean, this is real. I'm not making this up. This happened a few years ago. Now, yes, there's resistance to this because it doesn't sit with our common sense. We don't like to be told there's nothing we can do about something. And that's what I always encourage you. You don't have to be a scientist, but you have to use your common sense. When people tell you simple stuff like cancer's genetic, Parkinson's genetic, Alzheimer's genetic, the reason you got it but your brother didn't or your neighbor didn't, even though you did the same things, is because you had the genes for it and he didn't. You had the predisposition and he didn't. The reason that doesn't jive is because 300, 400, 500 years ago, no one was getting these diseases. And yes, no one was getting them. Not the nonsense of, no, everyone was getting cancer. The rates of cancer have not changed in 1,000 years. Let me assure you, says Dr. So-and-so, head of epidemiology at blah, blah. Rest assured, as many people got cancer 500 years ago as today. We just didn't know it. That is bunk. That is a blatant misunderstanding. I could call it a blatant lie. If we're going to pin so much of the expression, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all the neurodegenerative stuff, all the cancers, all the autoimmune diseases, I mean the big three, neurodegeneration, cancer, heart disease, even they will cite environment. But cancer, autoimmune, neurodegenerative, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, Jacob Creutzfeldt, Lou Gehrig's disease, lupus, scleroderma, ankylosing spondylitis, Sjögren's disease, psoriatic arthritis, all the cancers. When you hear that there was just as much of that 200-300 years ago, somebody's selling you a bridge. No, we weren't getting it 300, 400, 500 years ago. We really weren't. And we knew cancer that long. Tumors have been understood for many hundreds of years. We just weren't getting it at that rate. Now, just that's reality makes the statement it's in your genes very suspicious. And what do you know in your soul? You know in your soul that the dwindling ecosystem, that the infusion of billions and billions of chemicals over 100 years into our water and our air and blah, blah, I don't have to get into it, have changed things. And you got to keep that mind against, and again, the moment where you're told this is genetic. All right. Enough said. Take from that what you may. If you're new to the show and just listening, when you get a chance, get on the website straighttalk.cc. Get out there on the internet. You're going to see a lot of great information. Supplements to take, herbs to take, cleanses to do. But I don't think anybody's really teaching people to think. And that's what you got to do. Because health is not a supplement. Health is not a cleanse. Health is not finding the doctor that just tells you what to do. Health is learning how to think with the facts. And that's what real teaching is about. And that's what I try to do on the show. 321 shows. Collectively, they are an entire education. Increasingly, doctor after doctor after doctor on the site. And I know why they're on the sites. Because you can't get this stuff in school. You only get it from being in the clinical trenches with people who are not well. That's where you get it. You got to use your brains and you have to work in the trenches. You can't get this out of books. Okay, so let's move with these concepts. Let's move to another level. I just said we shouldn't be so fatalistic about the beginning of our illness. We should, in fact, challenge this notion of, well, it's genetic. You know, your father got it and you get it and that's the way it is. You got to challenge it. And there's much science behind challenging it. Just the fact that genetic expression is a matter of an unfolding of the quaternary, the tertiary, the secondary structure of the orientation of the gene, of the spatial orientation. Just in that there's an unfolding required to express a deleterious gene makes this fatalistic notion suspect. Now, what are we going to do about it? First thing you're going to do is understand you have to get radical if you're going to do something about it. If you've got a deleterious sequence, something that's in your genetics, something that you're going to get if you don't really do something, and you're getting the beginning of it, you have to get radically healthy. If you know you're inclined to get it from genetic profiling, or you just know you're going to get cancer because everyone in your family gets cancer, and you're into this stuff, you're into holistic health, you listen to shows, you do cleanses, you take supplements, so on and so forth, I have to tell you something. You have to get radically healthy to turn a genetic predisposition around. Radically healthy. And I don't think most people even understand what that means. I'll tell you what doesn't mean. I'll tell you what doesn't give you enough protection. Just the run of the mill. I buy my stuff at Whole Foods. I take my supplements. And yeah, I've done a few cleanses along the way. I've lived a good, healthy life. I eat well. I don't eat that McDonald's junk. I have three good square home-cooked meals a day. Everybody's got their delusion about what health is. You know what it is? Health is just so important and people know it, that you're almost forced to delude yourself into thinking you're safe. It's kind of like men and protecting their loved ones. The average guy in the street, he's sure he's going to be able to protect his family from harm. And the truth is, well, he's probably delusional about that. Last time I looked, at least most people. And it's not a criticism, and it's, in a way, it's not our fault. It's just that things that are really important, like our health, like protecting our loved ones, like protecting our money, they're so important we can't afford to feel vulnerable because we'll fry our nerves. So we tend to be delusional. And one place I think we're short-sighted is thinking that the norm of what you do for your health is going to protect your genetic predispositions. If you are genetically inclined to get glaucoma, if you are genetically inclined to get breast cancer, if you are genetically inclined to get Alzheimer's, if you're genetically inclined to be schizophrenic, to suffer from depression, you have to employ radical health practices. Now, I've done 4 shows on this topic. And I want you to go to those shows when you can. That's show 294, 295, 185, 186. Now, what does that mean? It means someone with cancer in the family that, better yet, has been profiled to show a higher statistic probability might do something radical, like live in a really clean place, which doesn't mean L.A. You see what I mean? Thinking ahead, planning ahead, might mean choosing a much cleaner place to live. You can take a job in Chicago or somewhere in British Columbia. You can take a job in Manhattan or North Carolina. You can take a job high up in the Sierra Mountains or in downtown Los Angeles. And we do have these choices. Many of us have these choices, and we have to think more radically. When I did the show, when I do the shows, show 185, 186, show 294, 295, lists of things that we can do for our health that are radically different. I don't mean a master flush. If we have time today, I'll get into some of them. That wasn't the point of the show. The point of the show was to point out in the gut of science, we have primary, secondary, tertiary, and quaternary structures. Those structures have to unfold before a deleterious gene will express. And that leaves a lot of variability. One person unfolds and another person doesn't. That's where the epigenetic factors come in. So now I'm putting together the concepts. You come from a lineage of people who lived in the North Atlantic at the coast. You come from a lineage of people who lived in the North Atlantic at the coast. Scandinavia. So you are Norwegian, you are Swedish, you are Finnish, you are Lithuanian at the coast, you are Spanish at the coast, you're from Ireland, you're from England. People who live at the coast that decide to live at altitudes inland are doing something that often is not good. Now, I've covered this in my shows so many times, where you plant your feet specific to your genetics. The impact of that can be massive. And those 4 shows were an attempt to give you a sense of what it is to think more radically about your health. Those of you whose lineages are at the coastline, the act of putting your feet in the ocean between 4 and 7 a.m. when the telluric ground currents are the strongest. If you're Greek, if you're Italian, if you're Spanish, anyone from North Africa, any warm culture who lived in unison with the ocean, let's just say the Mediterranean, as just one of many, many examples, who lives in a drier climate like Southern California, when we had clean waters, that puts their feet in those waters more regularly at the very early hours of the morning, when those seacoasts were safe to do. Now, I don't know. It's doing something for their health that talks to your genetics. Just like Banya talks to your genetics. just like living with the neurological coherence of your animals in the way I'm always talking about animals, talks to your genetics. Just like opening the breath so it pumps the cerebral spinal fluid, talks to your genetics. Just like practices like Banya, 200 degree temperatures flushed out in 50 degree ice pools, talks to your genetics. Just like fasting talks to your genetics. Just like breathing air of pristine quality talks to your genetics. Just like the real yogas, as I define yoga. You know, it's costly for me to impose my version of reality on many topics, one, say, like yoga. But I am telling you as a clinician, I'm the engineer. I make the stuff. I fix the stuff. So you can market it out the way you want. You can hype it the way you want. You can swear by it the way you want. I'm the guy that has to use it to fix the engine. That engine being you when you're not well. And if I don't see it work consistently, I throw it out. I challenge it. Now, I've been doing this for 25 years. It's why I talk the way I talk. It's not to put down yoga. It's to say that much yoga misses the mark. Those of you who listen to the show regularly, you know it's the way I talk. This is the way I talk that way. There is much fake news in what we call holistic medicine. And that's got to change itself. And it's not that people are mean or evil. It's simply that they don't know. What your average naturopath, chiropractor, and acupuncturist, and yogic, and massage therapist are taught in school, and the reality of the trenches are two very distinct realities. And we have an American public that competes with allopathic models. You have doctors telling you, why do anything? You've got Alzheimer's, it's progressively degenerative, you're going senile, you've got a tumor. Do the drug, do the surgery, spend more time with your family because it's all in your genes. So look at the choices for the average consumer. They've got the fatalism of allopathy and the delusion of holistic medicine. It's because we're not making a connection. And here is the connection once again. If you want to turn the gene around, if you want to silence a deleterious gene, if you want to have your genes express in the way or regulate for optimal health, you have to think in terms of the radical. And we're not a society organized to work radically. What was it, a show or two ago? I simply said, if you're in a position in retirement, skip the vacation to Europe, give $10,000 or $15,000 less to your grandkids when they get married, and build out in the yard. Put in the sauna. Put in the ice pool. Put up the garden. Pay someone to fix the ecosystem of the yard. And we can, and I have, gone on for hours. Know the local beekeeper. Find out where the honey and the propolis and the royal jelly are the best. It's a whole thing. Health is a lifestyle. It's not a trip to Whole Foods. Health is a lifestyle. It's not a trip to your naturopath or your chiropractor or your acupuncturist. We have to upgrade the commitment. And the reason I'm always harping on the pineal gland and the hypothalamus and the pituitary and the dural tissue and all these sacred pieces of flesh in a body designed by the Father in a way we will never fully comprehend. The reason I harp on that all the time is because if you open up those portals, The return on your investment is many times the investment. Health is not a detour. Health is an investment with a guarantee of a massive return. Health is not a detour. It's not, I don't know. Do I have the time? I got to do this today. So I'll skip the run, or I'll skip the stretch, or I'll skip the massage, or I'll skip the cleanse. And collectively, look, there's just not enough time to do this because I have to invest my time for a return in running around like a chicken without a head, doing things I shouldn't even have to do because I'm so behind and so tired I have to do them. That's usually what gets top billing over the things you do for your health, which gives you a guaranteed return many, many times. But you have to think radically. To fix the DNA, to change the DNA, you have to think radically. All right, now there's one concept. Pretty happy with the concept. I think that concept should sink in. You should get that concept. Now here's another concept. When cells multiply, meaning with one cell is old and it's got to reproduce itself, so you have a new cell, like your skin. Skin cells die, skin cells are made. Like the skin or the lining of the digestive tube, those cells die, like your red blood cells. Your bone marrow makes them, they go out into the blood, they hang out about 4 months. Then the spleen eats them, then they go out through the feces, but more are made. Liver cells regenerate, skin cells regenerate, bone cells regenerate. Actually, all cells regenerate. The heart replaces itself every 4 years. To do that requires replication of the chromosome, which is to say DNA replication. And when DNA replicates, DNA can make mistakes. The other thing is DNA gets bombarded every single day and breaks down. And it's got to repair itself. There are protection. There are enzymes. So there are helpers to ensure that the DNA duplicates itself correctly. There are helpers. There are compounds, enzymes that have all sorts of big, long names that repair improperly replicated DNA or get rid of DNA that replicates incorrectly. And there are enzymes that repair DNA when DNA breaks down. How does DNA break down? Go out in the sun, be light-skinned, very white-skinned, light-skinned people. Go out there in Southern California every year, 3-4 hours a day on a surfboard for 2 to 3 decades. And by the time you're 50, you'll get the answer. You'll know how the sun degrades DNA. Meaning, if you put UV light, ultraviolet light from the sun on the skin, the probability of cancer soars. And that simply means that the DNA sequences have been destroyed by the UV light. UV light eats DNA. Cigarettes eat DNA. Anything that's mutagenic. Really, just about anything that's carcinogenic. Anything that interferes with replication cycles of the cell means that that chemical or that evil ray gun, the cell phone, the microwave, the UV light from the sun, anything that degrades, that creates cancer, degrades DNA. Almost anything. So this thing about the sequence of nucleotide being destroyed by some exogenous outside influence, you hear this in different forms all the time. But what you're talking about is DNA destruction, and then what you're depending on is DNA repair. The balance of trade between DNA destruction and DNA repair. In that balance of trade, can you repair it faster than you destroy it? Is another big piece of whether or not that gene expresses. So what I'm saying is, nucleotide sequences that are inherited, that are dangerous, the BRCA25 gene that increases the probability for breast cancer, before it expresses, the whole genetic blob has to unwind, and that's under your control. The histone has to unwind. That's under your control. Methylations, demethylations, very much under your control. Epigenetics is trying to tell you that. Nessa Carey, the molecular biologist, I put her on the show, is trying to tell you that. Anyone that's part of an epigenetic perspective is trying to tell you that your familial genetics or your genetic profile don't dictate reality, not totally. But this is another issue now. What I'm saying now is, if because of your lifestyle, the amount of hits that your DNA took, how much were you on the cell phone? How much were you behind a microwave? Where you worked? Do you have high levels of EMS? Tremendously high levels of emotional stress? Exposure to all sorts of mutagenic chemicals. When we say this is a carcinogen, it means it's going to go and whack your nucleotide sequence. It's going to whack it out of order. It's going to break it down. So in the balance of trade, are you leaning more on the tide of DNA breakdown or so little breakdown that repair and the reparative mechanisms aren't even stressed? That easily the DNA load can be handled by your repair mechanisms. Now, if your DNA is breaking down faster than you can repair it, you're going to get sick. Sooner or later, something's going to happen. And when something happens and it's based upon triggering a genetic response that's not in the name of health, and you're told once again it's your genes, that is another misconception. So this loose explanation that it's genetic, what do you mean it's genetic? That my DNA repair mechanisms don't work? That the stresses to the DNA are far exceeding the repair mechanisms, or the repair mechanisms don't work? Which is it? Or is it neither, and it's basically I had a deleterious gene, and finally, even though it was silenced, it's now expressing because the histone activated and it unwound. If I'm talking to a medical doctor and he tells me it's genetic, he's going to be in for quite a discussion. And that's what I want you to get a piece of. Just a piece of it. It's so worth your time just to get a piece of it. Can you know truth? Do you know truth? For all the people that say, yeah, I know truth. Listen, I don't need to know all this because I already know. I got to tell you, I watch a lot of these people fall apart. When the heat gets turned up, they fall apart because they don't know. God gave us that analytical faction of our brain for a reason. So you can say, yeah, I kind of know all this anyway. Yeah, I know it's not all in the DNA. I'd like to watch you under pressure. Under pressure, you're the guy that cracks. I see this all the time. There's an analytic facility inside your frontal lobe that you want to respect. That's called building your argument on rock. The hard science challenges the fatalistic notion of genetic propensity. Now, what I added earlier and what I'll repeat again is simply, you've got to get radical. Show number 194, 294, 295, show 185, 186, not to bring, you must bring the more developed, coherent health faculties. God gave you faculties of health that you must bring collectively in large numbers to your genetic tendency. That's when you'll get results. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Do not put off the call to my office. That's what you do. You put it off. One of the shows I'm going to do pretty soon is why an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You have no idea how much you complicate processes when you wait too long. How many people I see that are in the intermediate stages of breakdown that should have come in when the health concern was just beginning? It's so much easier to take care of your health when breakdowns have just begun. No matter how serious those breakdowns are, in the early stages, the body's usually got the edge, so don't wait. 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. For those of you new to the show, welcome. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.